Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody. This is Daniel coming to you live from the EMS Lounge. I'm going to go over the trauma triad of death for about the next 30 minutes. We will try to take a couple of call-ins. This could just kind of be a preview to what we're going to go over at the State EMS Conference March 4th, 5th, and 6th in Birmingham. Before we get started, I was just told, I guess about 3-4 minutes ago, about a long-time boss of mine is in need of a lot of prayers and a miracle. So first and foremost, my thoughts and prayers go out to my RPS family, friends, former coworkers, all that, guys. I am so sorry. I'm actually broadcasting from the hospital today. So I just found out, and I am crushed beyond words. It's unreal. So we'll kind of touch on a little bit of that later on. But to all my RPS friends and family and coworkers, y'all have my utmost prayers and thoughts, and hopefully for hoping for a miracle and a speedy recovery. So anyway, let's jump into it. Like I said, this is just going to be a precursor to what we're going to go over in March at the EMS conference. You know, we all love a good trauma call. That's what we live for since, you know, when we come in to the EMS field. And we really don't, or haven't in the past, touch on this a lot, but the trauma triad of death, it's just a bloody, vicious cycle that encompasses hypothermia, acidosis, and coagulopathy. All right. Well, as people that have sat in my classes before heard me talk about, we have to look past the subjective nature of EMS and look more onto a cellular level with our patients. You know, we have to be advanced providers thinking, you know, just beyond what we can see. We used to teach patient assessment, you know, always tell people we're taught in EMT school, EMT advanced, paramedic intermediate, whatever, to be subjective creatures. And, you know, quality emergency medical practitioners, we have to look past the subjective nature. You know, we're not just looking at a coffee cup that's round and bright, and, you know, half full, half empty of fluid. We have to look at, you know, what the makeup of this coffee cup, you know, using that as an example. A couple of terms for those that you don't know, especially with the coagulopathy. It's basically just a disorder that makes it difficult for the blood to coagulate. So if something is throwing the coagulation or the ability for, you know, the blood to fix itself, to clot off. So that's what we're talking about with coagulopathy. Obviously, we know what hypothermia is, but the lethal triad or the trauma triad of death, a definition I found off the gems.com, just a combination of acidosis, coagulopathy, and hypothermia that usually leads to death in a patient experiencing trauma. And in my experience, whether it be the ER side, the HEMS industry, the ground ambulance, the fire department, you know, a lot of times this is stuff we do not do very well. I'm just as guilty of it myself. You know, we're taught ABCs, C-spine stabilization, and then we move to the exposure. We all want to be, you know, Ricky Rescues, and, you know, we take our handy-dandy, you know, trauma shooters, throw our patients on a backboard on the side of the road, cut all their clothes off, throw them in the back of an air-conditioned ambulance because we don't want to be hot, you know, and start trying to slay the reaper. Well, on the outside, you know, we're looking at it thinking that, you know, hey, we're doing a great job, and, you know, I'm not knocking anybody's care, but, you know, we're not looking on the cellular level beyond what we can see. All right, so with the trauma triad, it is basically just a revolving cycle, okay? One thing affects the next, this affects that, you know. And one of the biggest things that we have to be ahead of the curve is body temperature. You know, anytime we bring patients to the ER, especially to the trauma bays, you notice when walking trauma bay here in Birmingham, okay, the temperature is up. I mean, it's upwards in, you know, 95, 96, 90 degrees. And it's for a reason. It is a standard of care, and it is a patient care issue. Now, we've all seen, you know, trauma patients coming in. We're busting them with, you know, room air fluids outside, and you don't have fluid warmers, and you see the patient shaking. Okay, well, that's taking, you know, energy, and it's bad patient care. I read a study today that said over 66% of patients that come into the trauma bay come in with some form of hypothermia. It's 66%, okay? That is unacceptable. So we're moving to a higher standard of care, a higher level of education. The normal human body temperature is anywhere from 35.6 to 37 degrees Celsius. That is a normal core temperature. Okay, like we kind of talked about, some studies have shown half, some studies have shown upwards to 66%, which is unacceptable. So after today, we know that when we run our traumas, we're going to bring our patients in at a, you know, a thermoregulated temperature. So hypothermia, it's not just cutting the patient's clothes off. It's not just, you know, having our heat on them in the back. You know, when we throw somebody either in a helicopter or in the back of an ambulance, we have to have the heat on. Okay, like I said, I'm just as guilty of it. It is not about our, you know, creature comforts. It is about patient care and giving the highest level of care possible. Okay, even, you know, hypothermia has a lot of effects on the coagulation system. And for those that, you know, that you don't know, the COAG system is a temperature and pH dependent series of complex reactions with enzymes that result in formation of blood clots to stop internal and external bleeding. Okay, so it is temperature and pH dependent. So what does that mean? Obviously, the patient's body temperature is going to affect the coagulation of blood. All right, so what are some other things other than exposing the patient that we do that affect temperature and the patient's pH? Okay, I'm not a big advocate of normal saline. There's a lot of data and a lot of studies coming out. You know, it is a hyperchloremic solution. It increases acidosis. It has a pH of 6.0. It's just not a good fluid for trauma. You know, for my local providers, that's kind of what we have to deal with because that's all we got. But, you know, it's just not a good fluid. If you get someone with an increased lactic, I read some numbers the other day that 0.5 increase in lactic increases mortality by 10%. So just 0.5. So if you think of it, anything greater than a lactic of 4 is, you know, a pretty significant indicator of trauma. And every 0.5 that we increase that past their normal baseline, 10% increase in mortality. So just keep that on the cellular level. So if we had, you know, dropping their core temperature, you know, not only does that affect, you know, the lactic acid buildup, it affects their potassium. If we drop the core temperature by 2 degrees, It can shift the potassium up to 0.1, which just kind of starts this chain effect. Like I said, I'm not going to get, heavy into the lab value side, but we need to keep that in mind because we are now quality pre-hospital providers. So not only that, we're causing acidosis. We're, just fast infusing these room air and or cold hyperchloremic acidotic fluids. We're diluting and lowering their COAG abilities. So we're basically just flushing them out. We're increasing intravascular pressure, what clots we have formed, we're blowing them out. But, so we're not setting these patients up for success. Like anybody, hears me say all the time that, emergency medicine, especially on the pre-hospital side, it's not a sprint, okay? It's a marathon, and we have to embrace the entire race. So let's keep that in mind when we are treating these trauma patients. We got to wrap them up, keep them warm, turn the heat on, make sure that we're utilizing warm IV fluids. All right, so we're not going to throw off their coagulation system and impair any type of platelet functions, because we all know that when we hemodilute our patients, we're lowering their O2 carrying capability. So it's going to set ourselves up for failure. So let's keep that in mind. Moving on, kind of bridging off of that into the acidosis side. All right. Anything less than 7.35 is considered to be acidotic. Okay, so anything lower than what our homeostasis norms are going to be considered, acidotic. So if we have a hypothermic patient, we're, fast infusing a hyperchloremic type solution, we're hemodiluting them, we're dropping their core temperature, we're moving from anaerobic metabolism or aerobic metabolism to anaerobic metabolism, we're increasing our lactic, just causing a whole, just a myriad of issues. Any type of anemia from acute blood loss, we're going to have the peripheral vasoconstriction, obviously, because our blood is trying to compensate, or our vessels are trying to compensate, so it's going to start constricting, pushing blood off to our vital organs, which we all know is our heart and our lungs. All right, so when we kick over to the anaerobic metabolism, from what we're normally, using aerobic metabolism, our byproduct of this process is lactic acid, okay? So we have this buildup of lactic acid after the initial injury. These patients aren't perfusing. We're not, perfusing oxygenated blood. The blood gets acidotic. That kicks off a whole other myriad of issues with our patients. And we all know this from just general AMP, acidotic blood is not going to carry rich oxygenated blood to our heart and our lungs. When we have an increase in lactic, our kidneys are going to start trying to retain as much fluid as we can. And on top of an increased lactic, we're dumping 0.9% normal saline fluid, which is a crystalloid, but it has no O2 carrying capabilities, and it is not a volume expander. Okay, that's why, we in the critical care HIMS industry, we're preaching permissive hypotension. We want to maintain our MAPs anywhere from 60 to 65 because we don't want to hemodilute them, increase the intravascular pressures, blow out what clots we do have formed, decrease the pH, making them more acidotic, because we want to maximize oxygenation. Okay, and so we don't want to do these patients any more harm than after the point of initial entry. There's a lot of studies coming out that, you know, they're doing for pre-hospital fluid resuscitation, they're doing like a 1-to-1 ratio, as Eric Bauer likes to talk about a lot on Footbridge Ed podcast, doing like a 1-to-1 liter of normal saline and lactated ringers. HIMS industry, we're big on LR for pre-hospital trauma. But one thing we have to think about, and some numbers vary, 50 to 75 mLs per study, whoever publishes it. But for the most part, 250 mLs per liter of fluid actually make it to the intravascular system. So only 250 of that fluid that we're hemodiluting our patients with are actually making it to the intravascular system. Others, it's pushed out into the interstitial spaces and so on and so forth. So we have to keep that in mind. You know, trauma patients, they need packed red blood cells, they need platelets, and they need plasma. You know, we're pretty lucky here in central Alabama and north and in south Alabama that, you know, we have trauma centers within an hour or so on ground. So maintain your MAPs around 60 to 65. Unless it's a TBI, then we want to keep them a little bit higher. So we've hit on hypothermia and acidosis. And like I said, this is just going to be kind of a quick prelude to what we're going to dive off into in March. But this is something I'm very passionate about teaching, because it's something that even, you know, myself have done wrong so many times. And a lot of this stuff is a simple fix. You know, with the biggest thing with hemodynamic type management in the pre-hospital environment that we have to worry about is actual source control. And ask yourself, what is the only adequate source control out there for a trauma patient? And that's a surgery suite. Okay, now when I'm down range, when we were overseas, we had a little bit more capabilities for source control for, you know, major bleeds. But, you know, here stateside, these people need a trauma bay. They need a surgical suite. All right, so we need to do what we can to maintain, you know, adequate tissue perfusion and adequate tissue oxygenation, because we don't want our patients hypothermic and we don't want them acidotic. So that kind of moves us in to the coagulopathy side of trauma, and you have to ask yourself, what are we doing for our patients? Are we, you know, giving them good quality Hey guys, this is Daniel. Sorry, we had a little bit of a technical issue, but I'm back with you. I apologize. Hopefully we only lost a minute or two. But moving off into the coagulopathy side, okay, and basically your coagulopathy disorders are your DIC-type issues. You know, we're hemodiluting our patients. We're not replacing with, you know, any type of volume expander that has O2 carrying capabilities. We are hemodiluting them with a crystalloid hyperchloremic type fluid. So that moves us, you know, we've gone from the hypothermia, which leads to the acidosis, now moves into our coagulopathy. And kind of like we talked about earlier, it makes it difficult for the blood to coagulate. All right, so basically we're inhibiting our clot formations with these trauma patients. So we've got all these issues going on from the point of injury. They're hemodynamically unstable. were dropping their core temps, making, you know, their blood acidotic. And now we have increased intravascular pressure and we have hemodiluted them. Okay, so what clots were formed, we've actually made worse. So that moves us to our coagulopathy. All right, it is a common occurrence. One in four severely injured patients arriving in the ED with some type of coagulopathy disorder. And one thing we have to look at is predisposing conditions. You know, are these patients taking a daily aspirin regimen? Are they on heparin? Are they on, you know, Lovenox, warfarin, you know, whatever? And our diabetics, any type of, you know, coagulopathy disorders that they were predisposed to, then we add insult to injury with the trauma. So you have somebody that's already predisposed to these issues, and we add hypothermia, acidosis, and now we're kind of, you're starting to see the full circle with the trauma triad. All right. So it's basically just a dilutional coagulopathy. Okay. So we have been volume resuscitating these patients while en route to the trauma center with these crystalloid type fluids, which are not good volume replacers, volume expanders. So now hopefully you've got the mental picture, and I'll post some pictures on the Reaper Crew EMS page and a couple other my other pages of the actual trauma triad, and you can actually Google it, just give you a better mental picture of the actual triad and what we're talking about with this triad of death. Because what we are, you know, doing because of, you know, bad, you know, a lack of education, a lack of knowledge or whatever, we're increasing these patients' mortality. So not only, you know, from the initial injury, you know, massive blood loss and the strain that puts on the patients, we are, you know, fast infusing crystalloid type fluids, hemodiluting them, dropping their core temperatures. We're not thermoregulating our patients like we should. And we just dump these patients off to these trauma centers and cause more issues. So that's kind of the basis of the quick, down and dirty version of the trauma triad of death. We've got hypothermia, acidosis, and the coagulopathies. You know, when we start fast infusing these patients, we're pushing them towards the DIC type disorders and trauma, and that's just bad pre-hospital trauma care. It's not taught a lot. You know, the permissive hypotension is a relatively new within the last 5 years thing, but a lot of the older providers, it's just not being taught on the con ed side. You know, I am a trauma airway junkie. That is my bread and butter. You know, that's what I do, you know, every day at work. And I'm passionate about good quality pre-hospital trauma care, okay? So just a quick review. We've hit on hypothermia. We know how to prevent and to fix hypothermia. If you're on an extended extrication, you know, keep these patients wrapped up, keep them warm. If you see a patient shivering, help alleviate, you know, these issues. We do not, it is bad medicine and borderline criminal to infuse room air or cold IV fluids into these patients. We've all had IVs, you know, and all know the reflex shivering that we get from these IVs. It's just bad medicine, so we're not going to do it anymore. When they come in the back of our ambulances and the back of our helicopters, from our hospital providers, you know, you need to be in a thermoregulated room, crank the dead gum heat up, warm blankets, warm IV fluids. All right. On the acidosis side, you know, it's a little bit harder pre-hospital to judge and view acidosis, because we, most pre-hospital ground providers and even the HIMSS in Alabama don't carry ISTAT. So it's kind of hard, to see where our patients are lactate-wise. Now, the department I work for at the university, we did a lactate study a couple of years ago, got some great data out of it, and for some reason it just kind of fell short. But lactate meters pre-hospital are amazing. So, and obviously with the coagulopathies, it kind of bounces off the lactate. We don't really have a way of judging this, but we do know the steps to prevent the hypothermia. Okay, we're going to be very, very lenient with our volume replacements with normal saline, which is a 0.9%, and always, always encourage people to know what you're giving. Okay, we have to think of sodium chloride. When we fast infuse this stuff, we're increasing the sodium and we're increasing the chloride, and it is a hyperchloremic solution. So how do we manage this stuff? All right, kind of like we talked about earlier, was source control. The triad is an article I read in GEMS. They stated that the triad begins and ends with bleeding. So we have to find the source control. We have to find the bleeding and stop it, whether that be through, all our hemorrhage control tools, tourniquets, combat gauze, Israeli bandages, whatever your providers carry, okay? We don't want to stop. All of our treatment kind of has to be all-inclusive, okay? It is a revolving cycle. We have to check patient temps. We have to keep them warm, keep them wrapped up, keep, the potato blankets, the big, thick hospital blankets. And whether it be summertime or winter, your patient's core temps are still dropping. The data's out there. If your management tries to tell you otherwise, they are misinformed and they are wrong. Okay, we're going to expose, and obviously we're going to expose them, check them out, turn the heat up. We don't bleed normal saline, so we're going to limit our crystalloid infusion. Always try to infuse warm fluids like we talked about. Maximize oxygenation. All trauma patients get high flow O2. That is just basic pre-hospital care. So we know that we're going to maximize thermoregulation, wrap them up, keep them warm, turn the heat up on your trucks. This is good quality trauma care. So we got about 30 seconds left. Like I said, sorry about the technical issue we had. I'm not really sure why that happened, but if y'all found this interesting, share this podcast, like it, comment, tell us what you liked, you didn't like. Buy your tickets for the EMS conference, because we're going to jump into this a whole lot more. Kind of like I said earlier, my thoughts and prayers go out to my RPS family today, and we'll kind of keep y'all up to date on that. This is Daniel from the EMS Lounge, and we'll see you later.